Hi, I'm Steve.
And I'm Tom, and we're communication specialists at Aviva. In today's episode, we're going to focus on workplace pensions and how they work. Before we get into all of that, though, I wanted to ask Steve some questions and hopefully prove a point to you and the listeners.
Oh, sounds a bit ominous, Tom.
So for everybody listening, Steve and I are really keen runners, and we recently entered the ballot for the London Marathon. Unfortunately, neither of us got in, but Steve decided to go and book the Copenhagen Marathon. So Steve, my questions are surrounding that trip that you're going on to Copenhagen. To book the trip, what research have you already done, and sort of roughly how much time do you think it's taken you?
Oh, good question. You're quite right, Tom. So when I didn't get through, I was a bit tad disappointed. So I quickly looked at other marathons in other capital cities. I wanted to make a bit of a weekend break of it all. And so decided on Copenhagen. Why Copenhagen? Well, I guess it was mainly down to the flights. So it was a cheap flight over to Copenhagen that I could catch. But also mainly down to the fact that it's the flattest course in Europe. And as you know, I might be a keen runner, but I'm not particularly a good one. So flat is best when it comes to me.
So your research has been focused around flights, around the marathon itself, and probably a hotel, yeah?
That's right, and elevations, of course. I can tell you the elevation rate of most of the marathons in Europe at the moment.
Good stuff. So what are we talking in regards to hours spent?
To be honest, on planning this trip, I've spent probably several evenings just making sure that it was the right one for me.
So why have I started the podcast off like this? I said I wanted to ask some questions to try and prove a point. Steve, like many of us, has spent hours planning a trip, planning a holiday. And I suppose the reason for today's episode is to talk about, you know, the longest holiday of our life, retirement. So it's just really trying to bring into focus that, like I said, many of us will spend time on a regular basis booking those trips, those holidays, but how much time do we spend planning for retirement? And that's what today's episode is about. And we'll dive into pensions and how they work later on.
I see what you did there, Tom. Very clever.
So before we do dive into some of the details, just a couple of bits that I wanted to talk through. So the first one is that what we're going to talk about within today's episode is based on the current tax year and legislation, how we interpret and understand that. It's also worth noting that, you know, with a pension plan, it's invested, you know, like with any investment, the value of it can go down and it can go up. And yes, we're here to give you lots of information, hopefully point you off towards where you can get more information after the episode as well. But it's just, again, you know, important to bear in mind that Steve and I are not here to give you any form of advice. Also, just worth noting that I appreciate many of you may be listening and you've not got an Aviva pension plan, and that's absolutely fine as well. So feel free to hang around. We're going to talk about pension plans in general. So hopefully there'll be some nuggets within today's episode that you can take away as well. So I think where we're going to start, Steve, is talking about different pension plans and also something which I know is one of your bugbears. So, you know, the fact that the industry uses lots of acronyms and abbreviation.
The whole industry is just littered with acronyms and jargon and pension speak. So some people may be familiar with concepts such as stakeholder pension schemes, personal pension plans, KIMPs, COMPs, occupational pension schemes. What does it all mean? Well, in actual fact, if you had to take all of those pension plans and all of those pension names, you could quickly boil them down into two distinct categories. The first category you would label defined contribution, and the second category you would label defined benefit. Now, a defined benefit pension plan, Tom, and for anybody listening, is a kind of pension plan that gives you an element of a guarantee or a promise. So your employer usually has guaranteed to pay you a set amount of money once you hit your retirement age. And the benefits are defined, which is where that name and that concept comes from. A defined contribution pension plan, on the other hand, tend to be the more commonplace workplace pension plans these days. A defined contribution pension plan is one where we don't know necessarily what we're going to receive at the end in terms of retirement income. It's only the contribution. So in other words, what we're paying in is that defined entity, that defined known entity there. What we receive at the end is largely based on things like what we pay in over the years, investment performance, and the charges that are taken from our pension provider.
Now, I suppose most of us, you know, as at today, are going to be part of that defined contribution type plan, so that pot arrangement. In regards to that defined benefit, I suppose many of the listeners potentially, you know, could have been part of that type of plan historically. So they're no longer sort of actively in it, but they may have been in the past and obviously got a benefit within that, you know, particular plan scheme that will be due when they come to retire. What else is it known by?
Yeah, sure. So I think they're more commonly known as final salary pension schemes, or CARE, which stands for Career Average Related Earnings. And the rationale there is they are often linked to either the final salary or a career average of our earnings. So they tend to go by those type of names. They tend to be, in all honesty, the preserve of government agencies these days and government bodies, so the likes of HMRC staff, NHS staff. They don't tend to be very commonplace in the private sector these days. It tends to be the more defined contribution pension plans.
So many of us, you know, will have a defined contribution plan. Some may have a defined benefit. Something that brings to my mind within this is that many of us will be part of lots of different pension plans, and mm-hmm. we're not going to focus too much on it today in regards to retirement planning. But, you know, if we are thinking about retirement planning, it's just worthwhile understanding what have we got, what are all these different pension plans, because I'm definitely guilty of it, where I'd look at one pension or one savings pot or whatever it may be, but actually you need to look at everything that you have saved away and what does all of that amass to.
So that's right. It's all those building blocks, isn't it, really, Tom?
Yeah. So touched a little bit on both of them too. Was there anything else, Steve, that you wanted to sort of go into in detail?
No, I think we've kind of covered the concepts there. So defined contribution, as you've rightly said, is the type of pension plan that the majority of people tend to be in these days. Defined benefit tend to be older pension plans or the preserve of government kind of bodies and agencies these days. But I think just to go on to the state pension really is that bedrock of retirement income that we're likely to have when we hit our retirement age.
And I suppose, well, something probably just to add in the sense of that sort of defined benefit, defined contribution stuff. Defined contribution, in essence, really, I suppose, they all work in a similar way. It's a pot of money. With the defined benefit, yes, you know, as you said, there is normally a guarantee as to what we're going to get back at the other end. But mm-hmm. it can work slightly differently, can it, from scheme to scheme. And very often, I know when we are, you know, talking to customers, members, and potentially presenting to them, we get questions maybe around sort of historic plans. And I suppose with the defined benefit, it's often good to go and try and dig out a statement, have a look at that, maybe go and speak to, you know, who administrates it to understand how that particular plan works. Because as you said, it's dependent on, you know, some different factors sometimes as to what you're going to get back.
Absolutely.
Okay, so moving on, talking about, I suppose, state pensions. So we said, as you just mentioned there, you know, for lots of people, that will be, you know, the bedrock of their retirement income. When we talk about the state pension, at the moment, the full new state pension is £203 a week. Not overly helpful for people that work in weekly figures, which I suppose most of us don't. So if we convert that into an annual figure, it's just over £10,500 a year. So as you said, it's a great start. I would imagine, though, for many, we may need many more than that.
And I think that's really where the workplace pension plan comes in, isn't it, really, Tom? So, like you've said, the state pension is that bedrock of retirement income. It's a great foundation level, but it's not necessarily enough for the majority of people to be able to survive and maintain their standard of lifestyle on. So some commentators would argue that we need somewhere in the region of about 50% to two-thirds of our salary in retirement in order to maintain that same pattern of living. So think about the state pension plan and then the workplace pension plan. We should be trying to achieve that kind of level from that. So it's all about those building blocks.
Yeah, and I suppose there's lots of, again, where we said there's lots of acronyms, there's lots of rules of thumb out there as well, isn't there, in the mm-hmm. sense of, like I said, what I should be saving, what I should be trying to achieve. Again, you know, good to have those in mind, mm-hmm. but also for many of you, whether it's an Aviva pension or it's with someone else, you'll have lots of tools available online as well. So like lots of like forecasting, projecting tools, which yep. could be helpful as well. So just worthwhile going away and maybe trying to have a look at some of them.
That's right. Yeah.
So in regards to the state pension, we said, yes, it's £10,500 a year if I get the full new state pension. Well, how do I know if I'm going to get the full new state pension? So it's based on your national insurance record. So you need to have paid 35 years worth of national insurance contributions to qualify for that full new state pension. In regards to when you're going to get it back, it depends on your date of birth. So at the moment, the state retirement age is 66, but for many of us, it could be 67 or 68. So gov.uk, if you go onto the gov.uk website, you can have a look at what your state pension may be and also what you may get back as well. So a good place to point people towards, we'll put it in the notes and description of today's episode, but somewhere for people to go after the episode.
Absolutely. So you're quite right, Tom. So the 35-year qualifying record isn't just about paid national insurance. So credits count in much the same way, shape and form. And typically we receive credits for a whole series of different reasons. So if any of the listeners have ever found themselves out of the workplace, for example, as a result of a redundancy situation, so long as they're in receipt of some kind of unemployment benefit for that spell, chances are they got a credit towards that record. Things like statutory sick pay would count, maternity leave would count, people who've raised children and taken time off work to do so long as they're in receipt of child benefit payments, chances are they got credits towards that record as well. So it is definitely worth people just double checking what their record looks like, and gov.uk is definitely the website to visit.
Yeah, and I think as well, just to add to that, I've sort of termed it or phrased it as the full new state pension. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, what do I mean by that? Back in 2016 now, there were changes to the state pension and how it worked. Again, we're not going to go into that in too much detail because we could go down a rabbit hole. But as you said, again, a great place for people to go is to go and check their own, because, you know, historically it worked in a slightly different way, the state pension.
Mm-hmm.
Now it works in this new, simpler format, which is what obviously we've just spoken through and touched on. So, yeah, great place to go, like I said, to check the state pension. Also a great place to go if maybe I want to try and track down misplaced lost pensions as well. So there's something called the Pension Tracing Service on the gov.uk website. So again, I'm sure many listeners, you will have been part of several workplace pensions, but potentially now auto enrolled into them. So again, some legislation, a program that the government put in place all the way back in 2012 now was auto enrollment. So it means that if you hit certain criteria, eligibility, your employer has to automatically enroll you into a workplace pension plan. That's why many of the listeners today will be part of a workplace pension plan. So you may have potentially lots of different pension plans, several different pots lying around, and maybe that's something that you need to find out, you know, where is that pension plan, misplaced it, I've lost it, which again, many of us are guilty of that. I know we always say, Steve, you know, we sort of receive correspondence, don't we? And we sort of chuck it in a drawer sometimes.
Do we need to shred it? Yeah. And I guess just to expand on that, Tom, so another website, which again, we'll pop a link into the description for, is the Money Helper website, which is effectively a website that's been sponsored by the Department for Work and Pensions. On the Money Helper website, there's some really good practical steps as to what steps people could take in order to track and pinpoint any lost pension plans down. And I would always advocate just having a bit of a methodical approach to these things. So have a little think about where you perhaps worked in the past and get in touch with your previous employers to find out if you have a pension plan with them in place. You may have taken one out with a bank, a building society, for example. There are some fantastic standard letter templates on that Money Helper website. So you don't necessarily need to, you know, think about the questions already there templated for you to use. But it links off to that gov.uk website Lost Pension Tracing Service, which is free and comprehensive to use as well. And also several other agencies and bodies as well that can help you pinpoint any other pension plans down. So that's the Money Helper website.
Just moving onwards again, we said there that lots of people will be, you know, automatically enrolled into a workplace pension plan. I suppose what we haven't touched on so far is why would I be part of a workplace pension plan? Again, there are several reasons why you may want to be part of a workplace pension plan. We're going to probably focus on the main two, which the main two are the fact that if you pay in, so maybe not everyone is paying in, but if you are paying in, you know, you're making your own contributions, then it's tax friendly, tax efficient in your favour, you know, as at today. So quite simply, you know, if you paid in £80 and you're a basic rate tax rate payer, you know, £100 is invested. The other one is the fact that, you know, you're paying in some money probably, and then also your employer is paying in some money as well. So, you know, part of that overall benefits package is that they're paying into your pension plan.
And they have to pay in these days as well, Tom, just to add. So there are obviously different definitions, but the minimum employer contribution, generally speaking, is 3%. Always worthwhile just having a look at those contribution rates, because what we tend to find, it does differ from one scheme, from one employer to the next. and some employers will offer more generous contribution levels that might be fixed to what you pay in as well. So it's definitely worth just double checking what those contribution rates are. But everybody now should be entitled to an employee contribution.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, I appreciate that we're not sort of, I suppose, plugging contributions, saying go and pay in more. We appreciate that cost of living at the moment, you know, the price of everything's going up. But as you said, it's worthwhile, again, understanding how that works. You know, maybe in the future, if I can pay in a little bit more and get a little bit more from my employer, you know, is that something I want to think about and potentially do? So, yeah.
It's a key benefit at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, exactly that. Something else worthwhile touching on, Steve, don't know if you want to explain it in a little bit more detail, but around the contributions is how those contributions are taken. Because I suppose, again, employers might do that in a slightly different way.
Yeah, so it does differ again, sadly, from one scheme to the next. But some employers will take the contribution from your top line of pay. So before tax, and in some instances, before national insurance, if they operate a salary sacrifice or a salary exchange initiative or program. So it'll come from the top line rather than the bottom line. Other employers will deduct it after you have paid tax. In that eventuality, we as your pension provider are able to claim basic rate tax relief on your behalf. So we're able to add 20% on top of that contribution that goes in, add top that pension plan up. So £80 net becomes £100. If you are a higher or additional rate taxpayers, you are able to claim the additional tax relief that you are due through self-assessment or by contacting HMRC at the end of the tax year.
I suppose also, whilst we're talking about like contributions and how we pay in, if anyone has got any questions, I suppose, in regards to contributions, so whether it's an Aviva plan or, you know, you've got a pension plan elsewhere, with that, it's normally you go to your employer to find out how that works. They might have your contribution structure on, say, like an intranet. As Steve said, good place to check is like your payslip. And again, normally speaking, any changes to those contributions are done for your employer, because what happens is that your employer obviously takes it from your salary, from your pay, and they pay it across to the pension provider. So the pension provider is not obviously in control of that, you know, process. So all those changes are normally done, like I said, through your employer. So just worthwhile bearing that in mind as well. So we've talked about contributions there. We've also talked about, I suppose, employee and employer contributions. And I suppose the main benefits of paying in. Within that, we've probably talked on as well the factors as to what I'm going to get back for a contribution-based plan. So I know you mentioned a little bit earlier on, but just to recap, we have a pot of money. Yes, we can't touch it until later on in life, but what that pot is going to be worth is based on three factors. So, you know, what goes in, so we're talking about contributions there, how then that money performs, so it's invested. As we said, it could go down, it could go up in value, and then also the charges that are being deducted as well. So I think we've probably touched enough on contributions there. So yes, that's one factor. In regards to the investments though, Steve, do you want to give us a bit of a whistle-stop tour of like hands-on, the hands-off approach and where people's money's invested normally?
Yeah, sure. So most workplace pension plans will offer people choice when it comes to investments. So people can either be hands-on and choose how, where, and when they would like their money to be invested from usually a wide variety of several different investment options and set programs. Alternatively, they can be hands-off, in which case they go into what's called a default investment solution. Now, to make life easy for people when they join a workplace pension plan, most people these days are automatically enrolled into that hands-off, into that default investment solution. And typically how a default invests is it tends to invest more in the likes of stocks and shares in the early years. And then as a member gets closer and closer and closer to their selected retirement age, the objective of most of these hands-off strategies is then to start to consolidate what that person's built up and then de-risk. And it can be anything from 5, 10, 15 years or more before that member's selected retirement age. It's always worthwhile just double checking with a scheme literature. So yeah, I guess it all boils down to two choices. Do you want to be hands-on or hands-off? If you don't remember ever choosing an investment option, that to me suggests that you're in that hands-off strategy, that default investment solution.
In regards to the hands-on approach, as you said, there is lots of choice. There's normally sort of that menu of different funds.
That's right.
And when we're talking about funds, there is different elements of risk. There are stocks and shares, which is normally deemed as those areas which are deemed higher risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then we obviously go down the risk spectrum. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, other areas which are deemed lower risk. And with a hands-off approach, it would slowly, gradually, automatically be doing that on our behalf.
And to make life easy for people, there is an industry standard now. So all pension providers will grade the riskiness of a fund on a ladder of risk, it's a numerical scale from 1 to 7. So 7 suggests it's a more risky fund. Category 1, 2, 3 suggests less risk. Most hands-off strategies tend to fall in the middle of that spectrum. So they tend to be a medium risk fund, kind of a category 4 kind of fund. And that's where most hands-off strategies would fit. But it's always worthwhile just double checking with your investment guides as to the makeup of the fund that you're in.
Yeah, and I suppose those investments guides, yes, your employer may host it again on an mm-hmm. internal intranet you may have. But also, you know, that investment guide is put together by the pension provider. So you normally better go and find that if you log into your online account, or maybe your pension provider hosts that on a website for your particular, you know, pension, you know, scheme plan as well. So you could, like I said, go and find that. I suppose just one more thing that I wanted to touch on before we potentially move on. In regards to, you know, that hands-off approach, you've got those menu of funds.
Mm-hmm.
Normally for each fund, like you said, yes, it's graded, but normally as well, you'll have a fund fact sheet or something similar to that. And what do I mean by that? It's a document that's normally sort of 3 or 4 pages long, isn't it, Steve?
Yep.
And it sort of really describes, you know, what
the objectives, the philosophy, what it's done in the past. It will have the risk warnings associated with that particular fund. So it gives really a lot of the granular detail as to the makeup and the structure of the fund itself.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. So like you said, if you do want to go and make your own choice, you've got all the info there to make an informed decision, I suppose, is what I'm trying to get to. So great, good stuff. So we talked about investments there. So the fact that our pot is invested, so like I said, that's a factor that we need to bear in mind. Probably the third and final factor in regards to a contribution-based plan is the charge. The charge is there because the pension provider has costs associated with running that particular pension scheme, and that is levied from the members' pots. And that charge is normally displayed as a percentage. So you'll see that your charge is, you know, 0.50% a year, for example. So it will normally have the percentage and then it will say a year. I suppose a couple of bits on that. I don't know, Steve, whether you just want to give us like sort of an example as to what does 0.50% actually mean? And then why is the charge different from pension schemes, and how is the charge worked out as well?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think when we talk about charges, nobody sends invoices or anything like that. The charge is deducted from an individual's pension pot automatically by the pension provider. And a charge of 0.50% would mean in pound, shilling and pence, every £100 that's invested, 50 pence would be deducted in charges per year by that pension provider. Now, because it is a percentage of the pot rather than what we pay in from 1 week or 1 month to the next, 0.50 on a £100,000 pension pot would mean that £500 would be deducted in years by the pension provider. So again, the percentage is based on the pot size rather than what we pay in from one payroll run to the next. And there is a charge cap in the UK. So the charge cap set by government is 0.75%, which means no pension default fund should charge any more than that 0.75%, so 75 pence for every £100 invested. The economies of scale tend to play out here, so it tends to follow the bigger the employer, and the more people who are part of that employer's pension scheme, the more preferential rates and terms that employer is able to attract on behalf of their members. And the charge in the hands-on fund range will obviously depend on the funding question.
Yeah, I think, like you said, in regards to the charges, I don't think I've used an analogy so far, which is quite rare for me. But I suppose the analogy is, Steve, you go and buy one can of Coke, I go and buy a crate of cans of Coke, I'm going to pay less per can compared to you.
Yeah.
The bigger pension scheme, the more members, the more money under management, normally the more that your employer can negotiate that charge down on your behalf. And that's something which at the outset, yes, they do. But then also they will continue to monitor that charge and, you know, potentially make a change in the future if they need to as well.
I think that's the thing. So we've touched on contributions, investment and charges. The easy way for somebody to get in touch and connect with those kind of things is through the pension provider's website. So log into your account online. That will give you access to investment fund options that are available, how and where you're invested at the moment, what you are paying in, and also the charges that are deducted.
I think that probably brings us to quite a nice conclusion, really, where many of us will be part of a workplace pension plan because we've been auto-enrolled into it. But I suppose really the question is, you know, is that enough though? So for some listeners, it will be going away, doing a bit of homework. Again, another analogy, sort of putting together in my mind a jigsaw puzzle. You know, the more bits of that jigsaw puzzle I can put into place, the more I can understand, am I, you know, in a good place? Am I on track? Maybe do I need to take some action? And the start of that process is exactly what you just said, Steve, isn't it? It's digging out those old statements, whatever it may be, understanding, you know, what's in this pot, what am I being charged, where's it invested? Because the more of that groundwork that I can do, investigation, you know, hopefully the simpler things are going to be, you know, later on in life, you know, when I am sort of, you know, approaching retirement.
Absolutely. I think knowledge is power in that sense, isn't it, really? So just trying to understand what the contributions look like, how and where you're invested, and what those charges are.
Lovely. Okay, thank you, Steve. So for today's episode, I think we're going to leave it there. So from myself and Steve, thank you all very much for listening. As I said, within the notes and description of today's episode, we'll have some of those links that we have touched on, but hopefully that's given you a bit of an insight into how pension plans work and also answered some of your questions. And we will see you next time.